Hi guys, and welcome to another episode of The Moonalogues. Hello world, hello change. And today I'm going to introduce you to three new voices, three new people. The voices belong to Corinne, who is 67-year-old living in Liverpool and who experienced loneliness amongst other times during her younger years when she actually did some sofa surfing, which is, should not be confused with couch surfing. Sofa surfing basically means that you don't have a proper home, no flat of your own where you can go to, but actually are dependent on other people to spare their sofa so you have a place to stay. You're going to meet Elena, who lived in Berlin and is a young mum. She now lives in Liverpool too. And Elena never experienced isolation and the feeling of loneliness as much as during her first month in the bustling German capital. And then there is Richard. Richard represents the Kers family. He works there. And altogether, they will tell us how the Kers family makes a difference, not only in the way that it helps people to connect and break through the feeling of loneliness and isolation, but also how the Kers family provides help to bridging the gap between generations, how it helps to make young and old connect so that we all realize age is nothing but a number and to let the inner child out and play. I hope you enjoy it. And so let's do this. Today, we're going to talk about loneliness. Some of you already know that loneliness is something I care about in the sense of it is a topic we all experience in one moment or a feeling we experience at one time in our life or even more often. Some people feel more often lonely than others, but it's generally speaking more a hush-hush subject. And I think it's important that we talk about it and also to find out how we can make connections to decrease this loneliness. And I'm very happy that today I'm joined by three people. So this is unusual for our podcast. There with us is Corinne. There's Eleanor. They're both in Liverpool. And also Richard Bell, who is currently joining us from London. And he represents the Kers family. If you recall the last episode, we already did a brief introduction to the Kers family. You met Alex and found out how he was inspired to create the Kers family through meeting Fred. But I thought it's time that we talk to people behind the organization and also people who participated in it so that we get a firsthand experience on what it's like to be involved in the Kers family. So welcome to the Moonalogue.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So just for a brief introduction, maybe Richard, you'd like to start to give us a brief insight into what is actually the Kers family. What is it you do and you offer?
Sure. So the Kers family is a group of five charities that work in cities across the UK. So in different parts of London, as well as in Manchester and Liverpool, to tackle loneliness, to promote intergenerational togetherness, and to boost social connection. And the way in which we do that is really quite simple. We seek to create spaces in which people from different generations can come together and share new experiences and build friendships. We run regular social clubs in each of those cities at which older and younger neighbours, you know, partake in all sorts of activities, everything from book clubs to cocktail making classes, and have the opportunity to broaden their horizons whilst getting to know one another better. And we also run a one-to-one matching programme called Love Your Neighbour, which really, again, gives older and younger neighbours the chance to develop connections and is, I think, particularly beneficial for older people who might struggle to get out of the house, who might face accessibility issues, or who might feel a little bit more isolated and cut off from their community.
Yeah, it's quite a lot of variety and different ways you allow for people to meet. But maybe before we get to talk to Corinne and Ellen and hear why they joined it in the first place, why do you think it matters, or why do we need these kind of initiatives from your organization so that people across generations can meet and connect?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting and a really big question. And I think it's in large part because a lot of the spaces in which we used to meet and mix, particularly across perceived lines of difference within our communities, you know, a lot of those spaces have actually fallen away in recent decades. So in the 20th century, you know, we had big faith institutions like the church, we had broad-based voluntary associations and community associations with mass appeal, and people are less likely to attend those sorts of community organizations and institutions today. It's also true that our town centers, our high streets, the spaces in which we have traditionally come together have really changed rapidly in the last couple of decades as big global forces like gentrification and economic globalization have transformed those spaces and again just left us with fewer points of contact, fewer places in which we just organically meet and mix and build those bonds of connection.
Yeah, it's changing times. It's interesting. We all look so much into or forward to having all technology and the latest gadgets. And when then we realize maybe later on that we miss connecting as human beings from person to person. So Corinne and Elena, how did you find out about the CARES family and what made you join? Maybe Corinne, you want to start?
Well, I was a member of the FACT. It's a place in town, science and art. And we have a group called Digital Ambassadors, which we work with a lot of schools and youth clubs, producing our sort of alternative artwork to what's on display at the FACT. And I remember Rachel coming in and telling us about CARES. And I thought, oh, that sounds nice. But I was still a bit nervous about, because I was sort of used to doing the same thing. And then a couple of people went along to their sessions. And I thought, right, I'll go along as well. So I made arrangements to go along to the first birthday party. I had to meet up in town. And I just remember standing there because I'm partially deaf. So I was thinking, oh, I don't understand. Anybody wants to take part? And then this lovely lady came up to me and said, are you waiting for Rachel from CARES? And I went, yeah. And she just talked to me. And I felt so much better. And then I was taken under the wings of a load of younger people, had me drinking shots and all sorts at this party. And it was fun, and I felt really accepted and included. So to me, that was great.
How was it for you, Elena? How did you learn about the CARES family?
It's actually my husband who joined before I did. He's the same age as me, and he was in our library and he saw a poster on the wall advertising Liverpool CARES. And he's really into board games. And I think there was a picture of people playing a board game. So he was like, "Ooh, this sounds good." So he volunteered. And he'd only been going for about 2 or 3 weeks. And I saw the list of social clubs you could go to and saw the kind of things he was doing and thought, oh, I'd quite like to join too. So I joined, and we didn't attend a social club together because we have a daughter who was a toddler at the time. So it was always just one of us who'd go. But when we went to Liverpool CARES' third birthday a couple of months ago, that was the first time we ever appeared together in the same place.
But Corinne, for instance, mentioned that she found it a bit, let's say, a courageous act. But, you step out of your comfort zone when you start to go and meet new people and you don't know what's going on. Was it similar for you that you felt that there was it took a little bit of, persuasion or inner courage, let's put it that way, to go out and say, OK, let's meet all these people from different age groups and I don't know what I'm actually getting into?
No. Actually, I wouldn't say I felt like that because I'm quite an outgoing person, and I wouldn't have described myself as lonely at the time, but I was quite isolated. I was at home most of the time with my toddler. I still worked, but it was all from home, all online. I was self-employed, so I didn't have a team to have Zoom calls with and things. So I was actually really excited to go. Some of the activities have been daunting, though. I mean, I did a dancing social club once, and I can't dance, so that that was hard. And like the older neighbours were just running rings around me. So yeah, I think it depends on the social club that you're going to as well.
Yeah, I recall I was lucky enough to join one carnival with lots of dancing in London in 2018, and I found it very entertaining and lovely to meet different people and see so many different people to interact and just enjoy each other's company. But then at the same time, you were mentioning you did not know that you were lonely. I can relate to that. I'm a freelancer. I work from home most of the time on my own. Every now and then I work with groups. And I recall for me a few years ago, it was before the whole COVID situation, that I realized in a whole week, I had only spoken to one person, and that was the cashier giving me back my change. It's like, there you go. And I thought, this is not healthy. And I was not aware that I was living, let's say, so secluded or without any human real contact on a regular basis. When did you realize for yourself that you were suffering? Not suffering, it sounds so dramatic, although it is a painful experience, but what made you realize that you were maybe lonelier than you thought?
Oh, I haven't thought of that. When did I realize? I'm not sure, but I just noticed that going along to these events that were completely unrelated to my work, completely unrelated to my family life, and got me outside to different parts of the city just really helped and just made me happier.
I can imagine, because you mentioned also that you were a mum. Oh, well, you're still a mum, but you were staying at home and taking care of your kid. And I see it with my friends as well, that while it's a very nice and interesting and intense phase in your life, if you have children or when you become a mom for the first time, it also means that your rhythm changes from people whose children are older or who have no children. Corinne, how was it for you? Did you realize, is there any particular experience where you think this is how I experience loneliness, or this has stayed with me, so to speak?
Well, I've had that in my life for a long time, because both my parents had severe mental health difficulties. So when I was younger, it was considered that, you know, people were sort of reluctant to come near us because they thought it was contagious. But so I was on the outside always, and I sort of progressed through. I had to leave home when I was 17. Mom kicked me out, and I spent time on people I know's sofas or whatever. And that was incredibly lonely, because I felt like, you know, I was putting them out, trying to stay there. And eventually I got a job over in France and stayed there for a bit, which was really interesting. And then I came back, and I wasn't coming to Liverpool. I lived in London, you know, and my sister had been around the world and I hadn't seen her in years. And she said, come up to Liverpool and, you know, get together. And I thought, well, okay then. So I did. And it was just lovely having a sister, you know, so we sort of both sort of did things together. And funny enough, we both had children and our children have gone down south. So, you know, I'm still here. But it was quite hard trying to fit in, to be honest, because I've always had this feeling that I wasn't accepted. And I just remember the first time of going to Cares, when I went along to that party, I wasn't like the person on the outside looking in. I was inside. And it was absolutely fantastic, because I thought, you know, people weren't saying to you, oh, for goodness sake, because I can't hear, as I say. And people were, you know, sort of explaining things to me and talking to me. And it was just, I felt like crying actually the first time. It was absolutely lovely. And after that, I've been along to loads of them. And I've met loads of people. And Zoom during the COVID, that was one good thing about COVID, was the Zoom, because we just got introduced to so many different things. I got introduced to Collective Encounters, where we did poetry, and then I ended up going along with them, and I do an action group with them now as well, so that's marvellous. I've met all sorts of people from Manchester and London as well online through Cares, and it'd be great if it was universal, actually, it was all over the world, because I've met a few people. I know a lovely lady who comes from Prague, who we talked about loneliness quite a bit when she came over. And there's all sorts of people around the world that I've met online. And that's been really good for me. But Care sort of got me out of that. And it was brilliant. So I'll say thank you to you all.
High praise, Richard. I hope you realise that and pass that on.
Absolutely.
So, but maybe you can, we've had now two personal stories, but I know from back 2018, I think England was, or the UK was, the first country to actually have taken on loneliness on a governmental plane, so to speak. And I know that last year, the Japanese followed suit. And I know that there are more and more governments realizing the importance of tackling loneliness in different countries and forming programs. But maybe you can give us a bit of an insight what the situation is in the UK, so that we understand why you maybe well, on the forefront sort of on tackling loneliness.
Sure. Well, yeah, it was massively encouraging that the UK government was, as you say, the first national government to appoint a minister for loneliness and launched quite an ambitious national strategy to tackle loneliness. Actually, it was launched by then Prime Minister Theresa May at a carers family social club. So that was fantastic. So the UK is in many ways at the forefront of putting relationships, putting an active effort to tackle loneliness at the centre of public policy. And that's brilliant. But it's also necessary because we have reason to believe that we're one of the more disconnected countries. We're certainly one of the most age segregated countries in the Western world. And that's in part because of how our economy is shaped. It's in part because of housing trends. So it's certainly the case that young people in Britain are much more likely to live in city centres where they can afford to rent properties and where they can access jobs and economic opportunity, whereas older people are much more likely to live either in city suburbs or in towns or in more rural areas. And there's an extent to which we increasingly find ourselves physically and geographically divided between young and old. And that's only grown more and more of the case in the last decade. So the places that whose population were on average older in 2010 now find themselves even more comparatively full of older people. And I suppose when we see age segregation of that sort, it's natural that people simply don't have the same diversity of friendships, they don't have the same diversity of connections, and that increases loneliness.
Talking about the generations that don't meet each other anymore, would you say, Elena and Corinne, have you had an experience where you thought, I mean, Corinne, you shared already a little bit on that you felt you were not the outsider looking in anymore, but was there some particular experience maybe where you realized that people of a different generation or age group are actually different than what you thought they were? You know, this kind of experience. I, for one, I love dancing. So I was very happy to see so many people dancing of all age groups and with different backgrounds and just shaking it up a little bit. And it's not something that I have seen so often in Germany. I was lucky enough to see it in other cultures, but that's something which makes my heart sing, and then to see something opening up and then to form a connection through, in this case, dancing. But I don't know if there was something where you thought, huh, I thought young people are A, B, and C, and Eleanor, for you, old people are naturally grumpy because that's the only thing old people are.
I suppose I didn't really understand my daughter when she was going through the teens, because I never went through anything like that because I had to leave home and everything. And I wish I'd sort of met a lot of younger people earlier, because I got to realise younger people are so wise. I mean, I'm still learning. I will always be learning. And coming along, we've been to quizzes. We've had film nights. And as I said, you know, there's a lot of things that younger people tell me that's got me more interested in stuff, really. It's like, oh, I absolutely love art and music. And that's something really that I met younger people who said, you know, or do you want to have a go at this? So I learned to play the ukulele. And I just think, no, we can all give each other so much. And there's so much to learn, and you can learn from each other. And I just think it's really put me in a better relationship with my children as well, to be honest. They said to me, Mum, you're like a different person nowadays.
How was it for you, Eleanor?
We took part in a sports day a few months ago in Liverpool, a Liverpool Cares sports day. And I have to say, I really didn't expect to be beaten at some activities by the older people, but I was. And it was really well organised, in that there were some activities that required strength, others required stamina or balance. And I think we were quite well matched, but we did bowls and I really wasn't very good at that. And there was a lady who was like a really good bowls player and she won. But I think going to the social clubs in general has just shown me that older people are just like younger people, and that there are all different kinds of personalities, all different kinds of interests, and the age just becomes irrelevant, really.
Can I just say, I don't feel old inside. I feel young, and when I'm with the younger people, I'm just being as silly as they are. It's only when I look in the mirror and I think, oh gosh.
I think that's a wise words of wisdom when it comes to age, that we are by society put into a certain box, or we're supposed to behave in a certain way because, well, now you're in your 30s, now you are in your 20s. When you're 80, you are supposed to look like this and behave in a certain way. So I'm always happy when I meet people who don't. Because again, who says that we have to behave in a certain way? But maybe Richard, you were nodding when Elena and Corinne both shared their story. So do you have a story for us where you thought, this is different from what I expected when it comes to cares and the generational gap?
Well, I mean, I was really struck by what both Elena and Corinne just had to say, because I think this point around, you know, being able to just look past the fact that people come from different generations and recognize that deep down we're all people, you know, really, I think that's the beauty of the CARES model. It gives people an opportunity to do just that. And, you know, Eleanor said earlier on that she's not somebody who's sort of trepidatious or afraid about meeting new people. I am. I'm somebody who, you know, can be a little bit nervous when it comes to meeting new people. And I remember going along to my first CARES family social club, which was actually in Manchester. And, you know, it was an event where people were making music. There was a huge number of instruments around the room, and people were encouraged to just grab an instrument and shake it or strum it or do whatever with it and kind of make noise. And there was something about a group of adults, you know, doing something so silly together that you wouldn't otherwise, you know, do, really, that just felt really unifying, you know. And I think the great thing about the CARES family is it offers older and younger people the chance to identify shared interests, to build friendships built on those interests, but it also just encourages us all to, you know, embrace the kind of inner kids and the silly part of ourselves that we don't always let loose in adult life.
Yeah, what a pity. I also think there should be more silly time for grown-ups. There are nice projects in other countries where people are encouraged to, you know, just be yourself and forget about age and really consider it just to be a number for the time being. I assume, Corinne, music must have, you must have liked Richard's story about music, because you just told me before we started this recording that you play or learn to play the ukulele now.
Yes, it's absolutely fascinating. I've learned a lot more about music as well because of that. So I've been going along to the Philharmonic Hall and had lessons in music about notes and how music started, how they originally had recorders, and that was the music they played and chanting and that sort of thing. And that's fantastic. But I've also, at the group I'm in, it's called the Strumbrellas, and we've actually written three of our own songs now. And I'm really proud. And there's that person, Paul, he's youngish, and he's played in all sorts of groups, plays loads of instruments, and he's very, very clever. And he was the one that sort of set us in motion. And he'd had a breakdown at the time, and he's now back into playing music again and recording. So I'm really proud of that. And I just think it's a great idea, because there's all different age groups on that one as well, the ukulele music and ukulele. So I just think we can so learn so much from each other. And around the world as well. I mean, it's really, this music is in anybody's language, isn't it? So I think that's good.
We're all nodding in unison here, banging our heads. Elena, I know that you lived in Berlin for a while. Berlin and Liverpool are very different from what I fathom, at least. So would you say that it was easier or more difficult to break this loneliness barrier for you when you were living in on the continent, so to speak?
I think the loneliest I've ever felt was in Berlin when I first moved there. I moved there as part of my degree because I was studying German and French, and so I initially went for a year, but I liked it so much that I went back, and in the end I think I spent about 11 or 12 years there in total. But back to the first year, I remember I was doing an internship, so I was working. So I had some contacts at work, but I had my diary was completely open every weekend, just absolutely nothing in it. And I just remember just desperately trying to think of something to fill these empty pages. And I used to go to the cinema on my own. And then gradually I started to meet people. I joined a rowing club because I used to be in a rowing club back in the UK and was in Spandau. And then actually, it's kind of a precursor to Liverpool Cares, I guess, because I was probably about 40 years younger than most of the people that I went rowing with. They kind of took me under their wing, so that was really nice. And, you know, I gradually met people through work colleagues or friends of friends, but I'll never forget those first few months where I just didn't know a soul and just I'd kind of be wandering around the city on my own on a Saturday afternoon. And, you know, you see all these people in groups and all these groups of friends and think, oh, it would be so nice to have someone to go for a coffee with. But at the same time, it's hard to approach people and make friends. Maybe it would be easier now because of, you know, there are so many apps and meetup websites and that kind of thing.
I think definitely that the meetups and the apps have definitely helped to make it easier to meet people. But just in case you're wondering, I went through the same thing when I moved to Berlin. And my secret study is that it's sort of a test the city does on people. When you move here the first year, that it's really, it's not easy to meet people. I find maybe it's a job and cultural thing, or it's the city thing. Everybody says they're very busy. And I sometimes wonder, because if you've just moved here, how come you are busy and I'm not?
Makes you feel even worse.
Yeah. And I have a younger brother, and we moved to Berlin when he was about 10. And he said that he told us the story that he wanted to set up a play date with one of his classmates. And the classmate said, oh, I don't have time for a new friend. As it is, I barely have time for my other friend, so I can't be your friend. And I've never heard it in any other city. And I find this so, you know, if it happens with 10-year-olds that they get pushed into feeling lonely, and then you go through your life and you make friends, then you move to other places of the world or the country, and then again, you're feeling lonely, that I think it's important to learn, have the ability to meet other people and make friends. Richard, do you have any specific numbers as the CARES family you work with? I'm calling it the three P's.
Yes.
Maybe you can. It sounds weird, but it has a point, and I'm sure you can explain it to us.
Yes, yes, yes. So we like to say that there are the three P's of loneliness, or that loneliness is a crisis in three ways. So first of all, it's a personal crisis. And that's our first P. And I think this is the one that's easiest to get our heads around. Most of us will have either directly experienced loneliness or will have seen others experience loneliness. And we know how devastating it can be for our well-being as well as for our physical and mental health. Numerous studies have shown that loneliness is worse for your health than being obese. It's worse for your health than smoking 15 cigarettes a day. So we experience, you know, tremendous internal trauma when we experience loneliness. But it's a crisis too at the population-wide level. And this is our second P. We say that loneliness is a public health crisis because it doesn't just lead us to experience anxiety and depression at greater rates. It leads us to experience dementia. It leads us to experience heart disease, it leads us to experience strokes. So it's actually the case that loneliness is putting huge pressure on health services across the globe. And actually, if we're going to, you know, get to a point where with an aging population in countries like Britain and Germany, you know, get to a point where in our health service is more sustainable, then we're going to need to tackle loneliness, and we're going to need to tackle the deficit of connection that drives so much ill health in our societies. And thirdly, we think that loneliness is a political crisis. So that's our third P. And it's a political crisis because suffering what's sometimes referred to as wounds of disconnection makes us much more likely to fall prey to extremists and populists and people who would attempt to pull our countries apart because loneliness fuels cycles of alienation and addiction and abuse, which, you know, go to the heart of the health and strength of our societies. And thirdly, loneliness is a political crisis because experiencing it generates feelings of insecurity, which impact on our life satisfaction in a whole host of ways. And in that way, loneliness really drives how we feel about our communities and our country. And
I find it quite amazing how we experience, everybody experiences loneliness, and we forget that it's part of a larger, I don't want to say game because it's not a game, but it fits together in different aspects. And what you were mentioning about the health situation, I work with the medical university here in Berlin, and there it's what GPs generally say, the one of the challenges they have is because you lack connectivity, people come for, in order to have a connection again or a conversation with a person, they look for their GP because that's a person who is available, mm-hmm. which in turn then leads them to be overworked or having less time for other people. And I think it's important to become aware of these mechanisms and how we can partake and change that. Maybe is there, maybe to you, Corinne and Elena, an experience from the events you attended where you thought this stood out in particular as a moment where you thought you learned something about yourself? I mean, I personally think, like, Corinne and I are both avid defenders of lifelong learning, so we can always learn something. But is there something where you said, oh, I wasn't aware that I, you know, like Richard shared that he's more of a shy person or can be a shy person when it comes to groups, that, you know, it takes time. And then all of a sudden you learn that, okay, in a certain setting, I can be more open. Was there something where you felt that the joining CARES in one way or another has brought about a change within you?
In my case, I feel like I'm so grateful for my life now. I just want to encourage other people to take that step. And it really is hard when you first, you know, you're frightened of joining groups or whatever because you feel like it might be a bit clicky or it's hard to get into. And I just want to put all my enthusiasm, and it's made me more talkative and more come out of myself to get people in and get them, you know, with us. It would be Liverpool CARES, which I think is great, and it also gives you opportunities. But, you know, whatever age, from 18 years old or even younger than that, really, you need something in your life to give you, you know, essence, really, I suppose, really. But that's what I want. I feel like it's changed me. It's made me feel like I really, really want to put something back in.
How about you, Elena?
I think it's made me appreciate the skills of older generations, and even makes me think about people in my own family and the skills that they had. For example, we did a workshop a couple of years ago on repairing clothes, and we learned how to darn, and I you know, to darn a sock, darn a jumper. We had to bring something with us. I brought a jumper of my husband's that had a hole in the arm, and, you know, I could have like sewn it up with some cotton, but it wouldn't have looked very good. But I learned how to not only darn it properly with wool, but to make the repair actually into a feature. And when I got home, I told my mom about it, and she gave me a darning mushroom. Now, I didn't even know what a darning mushroom was, but it's like a wooden, looks like a mushroom made of wood, and it's to put in the sock or in the sleeve of the jumper as you darn. And it had belonged to my grandmother, and I just thought, this skill, it used to be so normal, and now it's like the kind of thing you go to a workshop to do. Or I went to a bread baking workshop as well with Liverpool CARES. Again, my grandmother used to make her own bread. That's just completely normal. So there are lots of skills that have fallen by the wayside recently, and it's given me an appreciation for how hard older generations used to work, and I'm sure still do.
Yeah, and I find it also interesting because it shows a different kind of consumption culture, so to speak, right? We some people are so used to, oh, well, it's broken, then I'll, instead of fixing it, or I can't repair it, so I'll buy something new. And I hear you about the mushroom. I'm the same. I have still no idea. So I will see if I can find someone with the skill to teach me, because I'm like, oh no, there's a hole in the sock. What am I doing? Life's challenges. Yeah. Have you any experience, Richard? Did you experience something where you, since getting involved with London CARES, even though it's more from an organizational side than being a participant, that it changed you or had an impact?
So in every carers social club I've attended, I have, you know, I can't say that I have learned any useful life skills, but I've absolutely been struck by how easy it can be to connect with people who you might not otherwise, you know, have something, who might not seem like you're going to have something in common with them, you know, if you are given a shared activity. And, you know, I have been struck as I've attended more social clubs and seen more of the carers family's work by, you know, just how vital need these sorts of, you know, programs and activities are fulfilling. And, you know, I've wondered what's required to create more of these spaces and more of these initiatives in places across the country. And that's really what led me to join the carers family professionally. I was a huge fan of the organization and its work long before I ever became a staff member.
It's nice to see that there are so many initiatives coming up, because people feel that there is a lack of connectivity. And I like the fact that, at least from the approach from the care family, it's not about being a volunteer and saying, okay, I'm helping out my elderly neighbor for 1 hour per week and then I pat myself on the back. But it's really about forming a deeper connection and finding that human bond, which, after all, we all share whether we like it or not.
Exactly. You know, I think sometimes really brilliant initiatives that try and do intergenerational work fall into the trap of maybe inadvertently, maybe intentionally, sort of presenting their programs as one in which, you know, well-meaning young people come and, you know, volunteer and deign to hang out with an older person for an hour or two each week. And that's not what we see in our programs. We see people having fun together and forming friendships. So we don't think that reflects the reality, but it also doesn't, you know, I think presenting initiatives like the carers families in that way is detrimental, because actually, you know, up until the pandemic, certainly, we have had waiting lists of younger neighbours wanting to get involved in our activities. And that's, I think, in part because we don't present it as, you know, just an opportunity to come and volunteer. We actually make it clear that, you know, everyone involved in our programmes has something to give to the other, and people really see it as a chance to build a strong mutual bond.
Yeah, that's really impressive, especially the you know, the waiting list. I like the idea that there is something so hot about the carers family that young people want to wait. You know, it feels like an exclusive club. and the reward is, or the thing you do or you get out, is not a nice picture for your social media, but really a social connection that runs hopefully much deeper. But maybe just to get clarity on that, because there are similar organizations, but still a lot of, and in a lot of countries at least, it's still a government sort of organization thing. Why do you think it's important to have communal based organizations like the carers family when it comes to this particular topic?
I think that it's really important that if we're going to grow new institutions that are going to purposefully bring people together across lines of difference. And I mentioned earlier on that we somewhat grandiosely see the carers family as a bit of a response to the loss of the congregational spaces of the 20th century. And if we're going to see new spaces of that sort grow, then it feels really important that they're shaped by communities and for the communities that they're going to serve. Because I think we generally find that, you know, local people with agency are better able to make decisions on their own behalfs than, you know, people in remote centres of power. That's why we're increasingly actually trying to hand over the design and the running of some of our social clubs to the older and younger neighbours who are involved in the carers family's work, because really there's, you know, absolutely no reason that this isn't work that, you know, local people can undertake on their own behalf. But government has a crucial role. We see that in the government's loneliness strategy, in, I think, the sort of general realization in British politics that relationships matter and connections matter. But that role has to be about enabling and supporting the development of new community initiatives rather than trying to do everything from the top down. That said, I think that there are some really interesting examples in Germany of publicly run spaces that are purposefully about bringing together people from different generations. So I'm going to absolutely butcher the German, but I think there's a really interesting model that in English is the intergenerational house, but I think in German is the Mehr Generation in House.
Sehr schön. I mean, very nice.
Awful accent. But, you know, and these, as I understand it, are co-located nursing homes and childcare centres. And I think our government could stand to think much more creatively about how you can just bring together the different services which people of different ages rely upon and do so in a way that allows people to cultivate community networks. You know, it shouldn't be down to the child, to the state necessarily to do the work of childcare if there are older people in the community who would benefit from doing so, for example. So we need to think much more about drawing on one another's strengths and creating connections across generations to allow us to do just that.
Yeah, I saw Corinne nodding her head. Is there something you would like to ask from your government, or is there a particular wish you would say, this is something that would intrigue me, I'd like to see that, or I'd like to see happening?
Well, yeah, I personally, one of the things that I would like to see is the internet being available to everyone through televisions, so everyone can join in, because not everyone's got laptops, and we are still in a COVID situation, aren't we? And also some of the online stuff has been so good. And you could connect then with people around the world, with whatever age groups. And we could. I did do one with CARES in London. It was a school, and it was absolutely brilliant. They asked us questions, because it was old people. Do you dance? Do you walk? And we were having a laugh with them, and it was absolutely fantastic. And I know that they did that. That was online at one point. But there's so many different things like that. You know that I just think. Just everyone can take part. I mean, I've learned loads of stuff from younger people, especially about technology and stuff like that, which I wasn't that brilliant on. So, I mean, like Zoom, never did a Zoom before this year, never did anything like that. So, and then younger people come along and say, well, you do this. We have internet sessions as well with CARES. We learn about computers and stuff, which is really handy. So, I mean, I'm open to anything. I would like to learn more, and I would love to do more. I think we're going to do a comedy thing in Liverpool soon, which I thought would be brilliant. And I thought, whatever age you are, you can join in with that, can't you? So,
yeah, laughter is a good thing to bring people together, definitely. How about you, Elena? Is there any particular wish what you'd like to see happening, either from the politician side or community side?
Oh, well, I think I'd just like to see the CARES family spread to more towns and cities, really, so that people in other parts of the country can experience it. That's the only thing I can think of. It that seems more realistic than expecting something top down from the government.
Yeah, and I think
for the reasons that Richard mentioned before, people, no one cares more about your own community than you do, so maybe it's people in those communities to get involved.
Yeah, and it's also the fact that we forget, even just if we say the government should do something, well, there is somebody has to actually do it. Even if the government were to say, okay, we provide you with a space to come and learn knitting, if there's nobody coming, then it's just an empty space. So somebody has to do it. And I like those initiatives. And maybe for Corinne, there are Living Room Conversations, which is a US-based organization. They don't necessarily aim for bridging a generational gap, but to make people meet from different points of views on different topics and have a conversation so that they learn something new. And I like your idea. I will join. If you set it up, I'll join an international the CARES Zoom talk about, or dance party. We've had that too. That would be definitely one on my wish list for this year's. Yeah, so I'm checking my notes if I have something that has what I feel has not been said yet. Yeah, well, maybe just from you, Richard, again, what would be your wish for the future, be it for the CARES family or beyond?
Well, I would love to see the CARES family set up a Berlin branch, because then I could go and live in Berlin. That would be lovely. Our big ask of the government right now is that it creates a national commission to help do that work of supporting and developing new community initiatives which do work in purposeful ways to bridge divides and to nurture relationships within communities. And that's not just us being self-interested and thinking that that commission might help to grow the carers families model. We actually think there are a raft of new types of community initiatives that have been established in the last 10, 15 years and have in some cases grown quite quickly, exactly because I think people are becoming more aware of the need for new spaces in which they can meet, mix and connect across difference. So we're pushing the government to set up a commission of that sort. We think that that would be a natural next step in its work in tackling loneliness and promoting social connection. And that's going to be a big campaigning objective for us this year.
And coming away from the campaigning aspect, but if I live in the UK and I want to connect with the carers family, how do I do it? Where do I find information?
Well, if you live in London, Manchester or Liverpool, then you should be able to come along to one of our events, and you can find us at www.thecaresfamily.org.uk. It is true that there are other community initiatives in far-flung places across the UK who are doing similar work. And again, if you go to our website, you'll probably find some information about different programs and different organizations across the country too.
Which is lovely, because it just proves that it's not about your organization needing to be the number one player, but it's about connecting, and wherever you are, reach out and find something that suits you. And maybe you want to set up a similar activity in wherever the places you call home.
Absolutely.
I'd like to see that.
We actually have already supported one guy to set up his own version of the carers family in Doncaster in Yorkshire. And actually, you know, we increasingly think it may not fall to the carers family to set up Glasgow Cares or Leeds Cares. If there are people in those local areas who know and love those areas who want to do that work, then we stand ready to support them. But it doesn't have to, you know, it's not just about growing our brand and our profile.
Yeah, it's going beyond that. And if I may say, I don't know if you are aware of that, but I consider you three very courageous people or brave people, because, I mean, it really struck me when Corinne told the story that she had to move out or leave home very early on, and then she moved to France. It's not only, you know, you're not only alone in the world, but you're literally alone in a foreign country where ways and language are different. You, Elena, moved to Berlin and stayed despite feeling a little lost on your Saturday night or Saturday afternoon walks through the city. And Richard, you expose yourself to meeting other people despite the fact that big groups might not be your initial drive, let's put it that way. And I really appreciate these things, because I do believe that if we want to make a difference, or if we, it starts with ourselves, and then we discover that we all have something to contribute. That's at least something I firmly believe in. And I'm a huge fan of the carers family. And when I get back to the UK, then I hope that I can join the Liverpool events or in London or somewhere else. So thank you very much. And I hope you have a lovely rest of the day.
Thank you. It'll be great. Great to see you as well. Look forward to it.
And if you like these kind of episodes, this kind of storytelling, learning about the world and how people bridge the differences they encounter, please share this podcast with others. Thanks.